Here's what I think the role of the head coach is. You know, not only are we steering the ship, we set the temperature. We don't take the temperature. You know, we're the thermostat, not the thermometer.
On this week's Champion Series presented by Signature Championship Rings, head coach Greg Vandegrift shares the insights into his coaching journey at Prince Avenue Christian School, focusing on celebrating each season and not just championships. He discusses strategic operations, including conditioning, substitutions, and game management for success in critical moments. Coach Vandegrift emphasizes offensive strategies for high-scoring games and the importance of team culture and values, as well as stressing the coach's role in creating a positive experience for the team and community. Stay tuned for Winning Edge takeaways following the interview.
What you see on tape is a direct reflection of what you teach and how you teach. Video is important, but if you don't teach well, you're not going to like what you see on your video. First Down Playbook has been helping coaches teach better for 13 years. It allows you to present installs, playbooks, and practice cards in half the time with NFL quality. Coaching tools like video pairing, a player app, practice schedules, and wristband sheets have made First Down Playbook a program management system with everything in one place. If you're in a position of leadership with your football program, receive a free one-week look at First Down Playbook. Call them at 512-814-6158 or visit them on their website or social media. Mention Coach and Coordinator Podcast or use the coupon code COACH24 to receive a $100 discount off the normal $700 First Down Playbook team membership price. Links and the phone number are in the show notes. Welcome to another episode of our Champion Series presented by Signature Championship Rings. And we're joined today by the single-A state champion from Georgia at Prince Avenue Christian School, head coach Greg Vandegrift. So, Greg, I'm excited to have you here on the podcast. You and I met, man, it's 5 years ago now, at QB Collective when we were in L.A. Had an opportunity to meet you and your son there. So it's been neat to follow you guys along the way and see what you're doing, but I'm glad we finally got you here on the podcast.
Keith, thank you so much for allowing us to share the gospel of Prince Avenue. You know, we're really excited, and it was a pleasure getting to meet you a few years back, and I'm glad we're finally getting to get together, and I'm glad to hear Signature's the sponsor because they've done our rings the last 3 out of 4 years, and they've done a great job.
Yeah, you guys have had an incredible run here. You've been at Prince Avenue now for 8 seasons, an incredible record there, 97-12 over those 8 seasons. The last 4 years, 54-4, back-to-back state championships, 22-23, and 3 out of the last 4 years. And yeah, as you mentioned, you guys use Signature Champion Rings, and I've been making it a point in this series to talk to coaches about making sure that the season gets celebrated. And as I was mentioning to you before this, it's not just when you win a championship. I think every season deserves to be celebrated, but especially when you do something special. And that might be just doing more than people expected. I mean, I could think of a program I took over and everybody thought we were going to be 6-4. And, you know, we had the second best record in school history. We didn't win a championship that year. We lost in the championship game. But, you know, those kinds of things deserve the chance to step back and reflect on it and make sure that you celebrate the people you went through it. I had Chuck Kyle, you know, 11-time state champion in here in Ohio on the podcast one time. He talked about every season is a book, that you write that story over the course of those 10 to 15 weeks that you play. And, you know, I think when that book closes, it is the time to celebrate that. So for you guys, what does that look like before you move on to the next one? And I'm sure right now in March of 24, you guys are already aiming at the next one. But how do you guys make sure that that season is celebrated the right way?
Well, I think one of the things we do really well is, you know, we take our time with the banquets always towards the end of January. We just, you know, celebrate our seniors. You know, we just don't want people to understand it's hard to win a championship. I mean, a lot of things have to happen. I mean, you got to have some good luck. You've got to have some good fortune. You've got to have good players. You got to have good parental support. You know, it's just not easy to win a championship. You know, if that's the case, everybody else will be winning them all the time. But one of the things we do at our school is, for whatever reason, it's always cold inside the building. And so our kids wear a ton of sweatshirts. So every time we win a region championship, we give them a sweatshirt. And then we always have a sweatshirt made for the end of the season to commemorate the season. So, you know, one of the, just the small, simple ways, I think it's almost like propaganda, that we try to sell our school football program is just through sweatshirts. So it's a big deal if they get to wear, and we only have like, you know, 85 made. So, you know, to get one of those sweatshirts, it's, you sort of had to have blood, sweat, and tears to get it.
And I know you told me, you know, with our sponsor that they've made life easy for you in being able to design and get those rings. And as you said, you've got three of them now, and this year's really is designed to commemorate those three championships.
Yes, sir. Just to give you like a little history, I remember we won that first state championship, and within two or three days on my front porch was like a little package from Signature. I'd never even heard of them. You know, everybody, I guess, in our state hears Jostens, but I'd never heard of Signature. And anyway, it come through, and I believe in giving people a chance, especially if they have a good product. And I reached out to the person on the list. It was Nate Gingry, and he and I just got to talking, and man, they're super affordable. They really, you know, like reputable, because they do a ton of bowls in the country. And so all I needed was just some of that reputation, just, you know, checked them out a little bit. And they really go in detail about what the ring looks like, what the size looks like, what you, if you want to engrave on the inside. And so they do everything first class and affordable. And so that's all, that's a win for us.
Yeah, I went to their website when we first were taking a look at them and potentially bringing them on as a sponsor. Was I got lost playing around with the ring designer, right? I think back to, I remember there was a year I wanted our guys to have the vision of putting a ring on. Now, we didn't end up doing it, but anything you can do as a coach to give guys a vision. And so I remember having a kid who knew Photoshop designing a ring. What would that look like? And I thought, man, what a perfect opportunity. You go on their website, design something, and put it up in a locker room. Like, create that vision of something like that, especially if you never had that before.
Oh, 100%. Being able to, like, I remember I had an idea, and again, they have an idea, and I sent something, and, you know, they thought it meant this, and I wanted that, and I just called them back, and they had it fixed within the day and gave you another way to look at it. And again, just customer service, and, you know, it's a service industry to me, and them making you happy, man, they just, again, I couldn't say things well, you know, well enough about them or long enough about them to give them justice.
And I know you're going to have your ring ceremony coming up here in the near future, but tell us a little bit of that design of the ring. As I said, it kind of commemorates now having three of those championships.
So what we did last year on the second ones, we put like two trophies in the front. And this year we put like three trophies and you know, it's sort of hard to do our cup that we have in our state. So I asked him, hey, can we do the Lombardi trophy, you know, and just make it the silhouette look right. And again, they did a great job of that. So we got one in the front, two on the sides, and a P in the front, you know, for Prince. And again, then what we do on one side is, you know, you got like your last name and your position. And I'm sorry, on one side goes a helmet with your position and number. On the other side, your last name, sort of our state and our record. So again, like I said, they can make it look as, you know, we've done one that's sort of black. We did one that's sort of white. I mean, we've done a little bit of everything now. So again, they do a great job.
Well, yeah, it's really cool. And thanks for sharing how you guys celebrate your championships. And part of that we're going to dig into here. I think what will be weaved in throughout of this is the culture stuff, but we're really going to focus on, so you told me that the way that you guys operate, your strategic operations, is something that especially allows you to win in the second and the fourth quarters at two crucial points in the game. And it's all set up in the practice and substitution and really how you think about managing a game globally. So we'd love to hear about the strategic operation that really gives you an advantage in this small school setting.
Let me just, you know, give you the scope of it. So again, you got, my first year, I think we had 33 players. Okay. And, you know, your single A setting, everybody talks about how tired you're going to get and this, that, and the other. And I mean, you're naive not to believe you're not going to get tired. And so to keep from, you know, to combat that, well, then that means you got to be in shape. Well, to be in shape means you got to practice fast. You know, you got to practice it. You know, you don't just, you know, go half speed and then you want to be full speed on Friday. So We were undersized. I always say we do more with 5'8 and 5'10 kids than anybody in the country. And it always holds true. But our practices, like we do, again, everything's up tempo. For example, let's say we're in Skelly. So we have 10 minutes of inside, 10 minutes of perimeter, then 10 minutes of team on offense after we've gone 25 minutes of half line or individual. So when we go to perimeter, the pass game, all right, and we throw the ball. So to give you like a stat on that, there have been 12 4,000 yard seasons in the history of Georgia high school football where a kid's thrown for 4,000 one season. We own four of those 12. And so we're throwing the ball and we're throwing the ball vertically down the field. So you got to practice that. So what we do is in 10 minutes, we want to run 16 to 18 plays and our receivers rotate every two plays. But if they run a go route, they're going to peel off and the other kid's going to step in immediately on that go route. And we're not going to wait for that kid to run back 45 yards or 50 yards. You know, so one, we're constantly rolling. So on offense, when we go like to inside, well, our inside is team. Everybody's working together. Everybody's running team. So everybody's doing that. We will roll six or seven linemen through, you know, out of that five lineman position. We're going to roll our running backs every three plays because we want them going 100, you know, miles an hour the entire time. What that does is that then bleeds over into the game. Because we're always practicing ones and twos, what we say is our best kids play one and a half way. They're a 1.5 player. And at a small school, you only have so many kids that run a 4.6 or a 4.7 or a 4.5. You also only have so many kids that are 6'3", 290 or 6'5", 280, whatever, you know, whatever your big kid is, you only have so many of those. And so what we do is if the kid's the best player on defense, for example, like our O linemen just play pretty much O-line. But our D-linemen, we play eight kids at D-line because we want them fresh, rushing the passer, you know, playing hard every play. And so we may take like two tackles on offense and they play one position on defense. So if all of a sudden that one defensive end, he can get 17 plays of rest during 53-play defensive game, all that helps. If the kid that runs a 4-5, he's the best receiver, well, then he's going to play third downs on third and 12. He's getting in because there's, only so many kids can run a 4-5 and 4-6. So we believe, again, in what we try to say is stealing plays. You know, let's say we just scored a touchdown. Our right tackle on offense is also our best D tackle. Well, after we score a touchdown, we immediately put in the second guy. And we let that kid get two or three plays rest because they're on the 20-yard line that time, you know, coming out. The odds of them busting an 80-yard touchdown is not good. So we're going to get him a rest right now. You know, we're going to rest in the first quarter. We're not waiting until the second quarter when he's tired. You know, we're going to immediately do it in the first quarter. So we start that out the gate. And so what ends up happening, Keith, if you go back and you were to study our 8 years, the majority of our game, if they're close – at the end of the third quarter, we win in the fourth quarter. Again, we've only lost 12 ball games, so it's easy to go back and look at it. But plenty of games at halftime, it's 28-28 or 21-21 or 35-35. And all of a sudden, it ends up 52-35 because that other team can't breathe by the time when they come out the second half. They're dead on their feet. So just conditioning and substituting early and all that kind of stuff is a huge deal.
So because you were a defensive coach forever. And defensive coaches like that slow ball game. They like the slow scoring game. So I'm sure there was a transition for you here, but over 40 points per game for 6+ years, which you guys have averaged, which is incredible. And as you said, that puts a lot of pressure on an opposing team, especially if they operate in a style of football where they're trying to grind it out. And, you know, for them, 24 points might be a big game and, you know, something that they aim for to win. So it really changes the dynamic of the game for you guys.
Oh, yeah. So here's when I first came here, you know, I wanted to run the best offense that gives you a chance to win every Friday night. But you also don't have to line up and just kill the other team. You got me? Like, you don't have to physically manhandle the other team. We started looking around and a guy named Bruce Cobley was a wing T guy, and he had gone to Clemson and Auburn at that time, and he sort of studied some of that Gus Malzahn stuff where they're reading and, you know, reading the end or reading the linebacker. And he comes back and he sort of shows it to me. He runs it a couple years himself. I said, okay, I'm going to take that. And then I'm going to take that and I'm just going to make it better. And that's basically what we did. Like, you know, we want 3 or 4 or 5 ways to get a first down on 3rd and 3 in the passing game. You know, we want 3 or 4 or 5 ways to get a first down on 3rd and 3 in the running game. If they got a big defensive end that we can't block, well, we're not going to block him. We're going to read him, or we're going to run the other way. We're trying to take advantage of the things we do well, and then we're trying to also eliminate their best players from, you know, having a positive impact on the game. So those are just some things offensively. And then we have certain plays that we believe we're going to take shots. You know, we're going to take probably 8 vertical shots a game. We only have to hit 1, 2, or 3 of those, and it changes the game immediately. And then if you're going to throw the quick game like we do, like we start practice with something we call 8-ball. And what we do is the quarterbacks come out. There's a quarterback on the right and a quarterback on the left. There's 8 kids in line, right and left side. So we're going to throw 4 hitches. So again, the quarterbacks, they're snapping the ball as fast as they can. So one quarterback's throwing right, one quarterback's throwing left. They're throwing the hitches. Then they switch, and then the other kid throws left, the other kid throws right, okay? Then they come, they throw bubble, we throw speed out, and we throw slant. So we do those every day to start practice. Like, this is our warm-up. We haven't even got the stretch yet. This is how we're starting practice. And so we do that, and then we have a concept of the day. It might be a vertical passing game. It might be the intermediate passing game. And so we're going to throw, like, say, again, on Tuesdays, we're throwing curls and outs and digs, something like that nature that are 12 to 15 yard routes. All this is to the right and then to the left. So my point is our kids are throwing about 46 balls, 48 balls in 10 minutes before we've even done stretch. We believe the quick game is just like toss, sweep, you know, but we've thrown it. And so that's where, you know, that kind of stuff, we got to be able to do in our sleep. So if we have all that, the quick game, then we're also going to have an end go, or like the perimeter screens. Every perimeter screen has an end go to it. And what I mean by that is all of a sudden the secondary's, you know, creeping down and playing fast. We're going to fake it and throw it over their head. You know, so every defensive coordinator that knows you're going to throw over their head, they're nervous as a cat because, you know, they want their DBs to run down, but also don't get beat over your head. So that's putting the DB in conflict, and then we want to put the curl flat defender in conflict. So we're always putting somebody in conflict on every play, and that leads to our success.
As coaches, we know that some of the biggest hurdles to our team's success can come from off the field. Your team needs support to tackle the endless list of expenses, uniforms, training equipment, travel, and more. But raising that money can feel like a full-time job. Thankfully, there's Vertical Raise. Vertical Raise is the premier online fundraising platform using innovative technology to create the easiest and most efficient system available. Raise more money in less time with a local fundraising coach who works with your team every step of the way to customize the ideal fundraiser. With options for online donations, digital discount cards, premium product sales, and even spirit shops, Vertical Raise has top-of-the-line solutions for every fundraising style. To find out more, visit verticalraise.com, and we'll get you connected with an exclusive offer on your first fundraiser. So a couple questions there. In that 8-ball period, part of practice, is that where you get the and-go reps as well, or are you working those in different parts of practice?
All right, very good question. So all the 8-ball are just the routes. Okay. And so from there, let's say we're rolling to practice. So the offense will have 25 minutes of individual and half line. So what I mean by half line is, again, small school. You know, we want all eyes good on good, like to the left side. We're only working left today, or we're only working right for 15 minutes. In that, we're going to do perimeter screens and we're going to do the and go part. All the and goes are typically done during half line work, which is a 15-minute period with offense.
Gotcha. And you mentioned also your run periods being a team period. We'd love to hear your approach to that and really the why behind it too.
Okay, because we're an RPO team, so we're always working the RPOs as well. So, for example, let's say we come out there and sometimes we manipulate it to where this should be an RPO, meaning a perimeter thrown ball. We've manipulated it and we do throw the RPO. Then what we do is immediately get right back on the line and run the run play, and we don't do the RPO. You got me? So every RPO gets an automatic repeat of the run, so that way we don't miss the run. So that's why we do teams. So that way we're always working on all of our RPO portions and making the quarterback read that as well as the receiver.
Right. Digging into the quick game a little bit, there was a time when it's my first head coaching job, and I had, especially relative to our comps, we were the smallest school in the conference, and we had some small players on the offensive line. I mean, I'm talking, you know, maybe only a couple guys over 200 pounds on the offensive line. So we utilized somewhat of a wing T run game, but we actually led the conference in passing, and 90% of those calls were quick game calls. And what was really important, you mentioned this, like stressing a defender. I think people look at quick game and sometimes I think maybe are too light in what they put together, because I think the approach we had was we wanted to be able to high-low a defender. We wanted to be able to in-out a defender. Like, we wanted him to have to deal with different types of stressors and how that quick game was coming at him. And because he did, it slowed him down. It wasn't like, okay, I know on this particular play, they're going inside me and outside me, and I'm going to be quick to react one way or the other. But because sometimes, you know, he might have something outside of him, but we're bringing somebody in like a slant arrow as an example, right? So for you, what's the approach, I guess, strategically to how you put the quick game together, and how much do you need for that to be effective?
You know, everybody scouts. So you go in with a, you know, preset notion of what you think you're going to do, and then you got to quickly analyze. And I think this is also maybe something that allows us to be successful or take us to the next level. Is I think we probably have honestly two or three coaches on our staff that can coach probably for most any college out there. But for whatever reason, you know, family decisions or whatever, we've chosen to stay at high school. And so what I mean by that is nothing egotistical, but just the fact that we can quickly see the field and we can quickly see what they're giving us. And then we want to manipulate it. We want to get them to quickly try to get them to come down on a hitch, you know, and then hit them on a hitch and go. Or we want to get them to play the, you know, come down quick on the screen game and then hit them on a vertical with it, you know, sliding our guys in behind. Now, also in our quick game, we have where we're reading it. And what I mean is, if it's a hitch or a slant, you know, if the guy's got somebody that can quickly make a play on the hitch, like let's say we're in a trip formation and the number three receiver has an apex receiver or, excuse me, apex DB or linebacker, then what we may do is we may inside or release them and hit him on a slant. You follow me? Because they're not giving us the hitch. But if they're not giving us the hitch, they are giving us the slant. We just have to put the ball on top of the receiver, you know, put him on his chin, as we're saying. So that's stuff we work on, and you know, we drill it, and we say our guys have to win. You know, they got to win on this route. Again, that's a read it kind of hitch slant play that we have. And we think, like, you know, that's a first down play for us, because all of a sudden we hit that thing and it's an 8-yard gain. Now it's a second and two. Well, heck, if it's second two, we're throwing it deep. You know, we're going to think we can get it on third and two. So we're going to throw it deep and take our chances, you know. And so all that stuff plays off itself.
So, Coach, transitioning more into the leadership and culture aspect of the way you guys run your program, as we were talking beforehand, you said something I wrote down here I thought was an impactful quote, that the leader feeds the leaders. And for you, you've got a program where you've been able to put together a coaching staff, and you had to basically start from scratch when you first came into Prince Avenue. But you have a group of guys who you feel are able to impact these young men's lives. And you're also, though, able to give them some value in what they're doing, and many of them being volunteers.
First off, thank you. Great question. Here's what I think the role of the head coach is. You know, not only is it, are we steering the ship, we set the temperature. We don't take the temperature. You know, we're the thermostat, not the thermometer. When you're setting a program, you know, you look around and, okay, we, like, I want to have five coaches on offense and five coaches on defense. At a small school, you know, obviously financially they can't afford that. So I'm willing to look outside the building for help. And what I mean is, I'm willing to get community coaches. Well, if you're going to get community coaches, first off, these guys are typically leaders in their industry. You know, they're either, they own their own business or, you know, they're in some kind of leadership. Well, leaders don't listen to other leaders unless you can add value to their lives. So we have basically 13 coaches now, and eight of them are outside the building. So we've got five that, you know, basically are lifetime coaches, and we got eight that want to give back to the community or want to give back or, you know, want to be part of that locker room or whatever it is. And so it's my job to listen to those eight guys, hear what it is they want to give back or hear what it is they want to do and try to make that happen if it adds value to our program. And then if it adds value to our program, I've got to then provide an atmosphere that adds value to their lives, because you know what? Business people that are millionaires or whatever, they don't have time to come in there and clown around. They got to come in there like a surgeon, do their job, get it done, and get out. What we have done a good job of doing is our culture. One, we all expect to win. You know, everybody's working hard, and if we're all going to work the same amount of time, you know, 2 hours and 45 minutes or whatever, then why don't we win? Why don't we want to work hard and do all the things to win? These guys, you know, if you're a millionaire, I would say you're a winner in your industry. I mean, you know, say I'm wrong on that, but I would think you're a winner. And then you're not going to go hang out with other winners if they're not adding value or we're not winning. So just all the things that's worked out really well for us is we've got the right people. We got the right people on the boat. We're all paddling the same direction. You know, that's the biggest thing I just tell them, is look, we want you in here, but understand this. We're all paddling the same direction. You know, we're all trying to accomplish the same goal, which now we're at the point where at the end of every season, we want to win a state championship. We don't want to play for the state championship. We want to win the state championship. And again, it takes the same amount of time, same amount of preparation. It just takes better focus.
From the perspective of one of the things you do, I think that is very impactful, because I had been a part of a program that did something similar. You do a father-son dinner. You have the questions kind of so there can be a discussion between dad and son, or about, you know, those guys talking about each other. Having been a part of that, I mentioned to you that we used to do it. This is when I was at BW. Our head coach, John Snell, had put this together. I can't remember exactly if he came up with it or had heard it from somewhere, but we would always do it the last home game, and we found that it was so emotional that, you know, we were worried it was taking away from the emotion of the game the next day. So we moved it to after the season, which is when you guys are doing it towards the end of the season. Talk to us about your father-son dinner, what that is, and what it means to everybody involved.
I was at Woodward Academy for 11 years, and they had something they called a father-son dinner. And what would happen is, you know, again, sort of similar like you're talking about, like the last Thursday of the regular season, we would have like hamburgers, hot dogs for, you know, the freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. And then we would have the seniors in, and those dads, and they would grill steaks, and we would just have a dinner. And that's all it was. We just eat together and leave. And so when I came to Prince, then I'm going to be the head coach, I just wanted to take that thing to the next level, I thought. And I just thought, if we're going to have fathers here with sons, you know, the seniors, and, you know, I grew up without a father, so I didn't have these relationships. I didn't have these conversations. I didn't hear my father say a ton of times, hey, I love you and I care about you, and those things that every young man needs to hear. But I do have my own son, and I do want to make sure he hears it and my daughter hears it. So what I decided was I was going to write three questions. I wasn't going to give it to them until they showed up. That way they were unprepared and they didn't have time to write down a bunch of BS answers, but I wanted what was in their heart to come out on that sheet of paper. You know, these guys would show up. We have it like, you know, in a cafeteria style setting. And again, some kids don't have a father. So I just say just a significant, you know, male role model in their lives, you know, whoever it is, it could be a coach, you know, whoever it is. And so I ask them three questions. And So they go by number again, like if it's number three, he's up and he says, "Hey, you know, I'm Brock Vandegrift. This is my dad, Greg." And, you know, so like the first question would be something like, "Dad, I want you to know I'm really proud of you when you do blank." And he says whatever he wants. And then the father says the same, you know, reads the question and then gets his answer. And then the next one is something generic like, you know, none of this is rocket science. It's just, you know, some, again, a few words that leads into an answer. And so the second one was something like, you know, something about sacrifice is what I'm trying to get them to talk about. Something about sacrifice that as I see you make this sacrifice, it inspires me in a, you know, how. And so each one of them say it about each other. And then the last one is something like win, lose, or draw. At the end of the day, I want you to know, and Keith, I'm trying to get them to say, I want you to know I love you. You know, I'm trying to get them to look at each other and say, I want you to know I love you. And I want them to have to say it in front of everybody in the room. And, you know, it's a thing where, man, there's hardly a dry eye in that thing. You know, I mean, some of them are lovely and you can tell the fathers have done a really good job or the kid, you know, there's a lot of open dialogue and conversation. And Keith, honestly, some of them are awkward, you know, and I hate it for the kid as I see it, you know, but I'm glad he's got, you know, at least they've had this one moment, you know, and again, none of these things are perfect, but you're just trying to get fathers and sons to interact one more time in a setting that means something.
You know, to wrap up, Coach, I think when you look at any good program in today's game, and I think this has changed over time. I think our approach to coaching has changed where, you know, the attitude just used to be, hey, I'm the coach, I'm going to deal with the player, I'm not going to deal with the parent. But, you know, having myself now been through kids playing at the high school level, the son still playing at the college level, the whole thing, the experience affects anybody who's involved with that player. And it's about creating a great life experience. And yes, you want winning to be a part of it, but it seems like in everything you do, that's kind of what you're engineering here, is that you want a great experience for everybody involved.
You know, 100%. We give the PA announcer a ring. You know, we give the bus drivers a ring. We want all, I mean, because here's the way I see it. Then, I mean, what's $175 for a guy that's volunteered his time the entire year? We get one shot at this thing, Keith. Why not try to impact as many lives as you can in a positive manner? I have plaques made for all the businesses within a few miles of our school, whether they support us or not, and I take it to them at the end of the season and I give it to them because I want them to know they're part of our community. You know, and we're a private school, so you have to be intentional about community. I just think if the coach chooses to, you know, he can have an impact far greater than just this football team. And I think that's part of our role.
Well, Greg, it was great to finally get you here on the podcast. Certainly best of luck to you and the Wolverines here as you guys work towards number 4 here in 2024. And love to have you back again sometime.
Keith, again, appreciate everything you're doing. Special hats off to Signature for sponsoring, you know, your podcast. Anytime I can help out, just please reach out. Would love to share more. And again, thank you for asking me.
Here are Winning Edge takeaways and ideas for implementation. 1, be intentional in celebrating each season. As coaches, we always have next year, so the poignancy of the end of a season is not as sharp for us as it is for our players, especially our seniors. Remember that all of this is part of a life experience, hopefully one that positively impacts everyone involved. So take time to celebrate closing the book on the season. So take time to celebrate closing the book on the season you just completed in a way that is an exclamation point rather than what at times can feel like the obligational all-athletics banquet at the end of the season. What can you do to create appreciation for the 12 months of hard work that went into it and the 4 years or more that went into the group of seniors' athletic careers? I'd love to hear and share ideas that you do that are unique and help in this regard, so email me or DM me with those thoughts. 2, build your team to accomplish the style of play you want on game day. We had a similar conversation with Alex Golish yesterday on Culture OS. For Coach Vandegrift, it's what he calls his strategic operations, which goes into substitution plans on game day, but is reflected in the structure of practice. Look at the big picture of what you want to accomplish and engineer it through everything you do. And three, create special traditions. Whether it's the father-son dinner, a senior tradition, senior tackle, etc., those small traditions help to create the memorable experience. Don't forget the place of those in your program. Sometimes they're in place when you inherit them and when you take over, but you always want to have the ability to put your personal touch on them to enhance it and make it your own. Be sure to check out our partner, Signature Championship Rings, at signaturechampions.com and use their ring designer to create that vision for your team. Follow all we're doing at coachingcoordinator.com and follow us on X at Coach K Grabowski.